We're in the studio today with Susan and Kim McMillan from Shuswap Theatre. Hello.
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 And you're going to tell us all about Shuswap Theatre starting at the very beginning, right?
Yes.
How did things start?
Well, we know that theatre was alive and well in Salmon Arm in the 1960s. And the group was called Shuswap Players. But for some reason, that group closed and there was no theatre for a number of years. Then in September of 1977, Jack Aloof, who was the director of recreation for the district of Salmon Arm, as it was called then, and James Bowlby, who was the drama teacher at J.L. Jackson, put an ad in the paper inviting anyone who was interested in reviving theatre to come to the meeting. And to their great surprise, 24 people showed up.
Wow.
And that's how Shuswap Theatre started.
Whereabouts did it start?
That meeting was in J.L. Jackson, the old J.L. Jackson that doesn't exist anymore. And I was one of the 24 people at that meeting. And out of that, we put on 3 one-acts just for family and friends. And that was in the log building on Fifth Avenue, which at that time was a youth center and is now the
Church of Christ.
And those were the first productions. But then from there, we moved to J.L. Jackson Gym, and we put on 2 shows in 1978, one of which was Fiddler on the Roof with cast of not quite thousands, but it was a large cast. And when we look back on it, we can hardly believe that we did that, because everything had to be taken down after every rehearsal, after every performance. I believe there were 3 performances. And mounted again for the next one. And it happened.
It's amazing what people will do.
It is.
And what they can accomplish.
Yes.
We didn't know what was impossible back then.
Well, yeah.
However, it did make us realize that we couldn't continue that way. So we started looking for a place to rent. And the place we found was in Tappan. It was a building that does not exist anymore. It was to the east of Tappan Co-op. And it had been, well, I think it had been many things over the years.
It was a little community hall of sorts. But it was related to, it seems to me, a women's group.
It was the Tappan Women's Institute at one point. But it also had been a supper club, and I believe after we left it became apartments before it was finally taken down. But it was very small. We were there for 2 years, and it was very challenging.
Very, very low ceilings, really hard to light.
Yes.
Hardly any space backstage for, no wing space, hardly any room to move.
Yes.
But for us.
The audience was right up against the stage, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but we did some great shows there.
We did. We were there for 2 years and then decided to look for a building that could be our home. And we purchased the building that Shuswap Theatre is in right now, which at that time was Shuswap Radiator, and it's just not recognizable from then to now. It took a lot of work. It took a lot of money.
I shake my head now when I think about how the heck did we do it?
I know. It's hard to believe, truly, when we look back at the old photographs. But
and with all of the requirements for buildings today and building codes and so on that just get more and more strict all the time, we never could have done it today.
No, probably not.
Because the building inspectors, they let go all kinds of things that, not safety things, but, our washrooms are not up to standard for accessibility, for example.
And, yes.
But nevertheless, it's been a good little building for us. It's been a great home.
But we were only able to do all that because of the generosity of local businesses, many who donated materials or gave us money. We also got an interest-free loan from the district of Salmon Arm, which was huge for us. And then an interesting thing is that Lois Higgins, who was very involved then, mainly in getting grants and so on, And Lois actually took the train to Vancouver to talk to the people at the Vancouver Foundation, because there was no Shuswap Foundation then. And she managed to get a fairly large grant from Vancouver Foundation to complete the work.
The arts are so important in Salmon Arm.
Yes.
I mean, they're actually important everywhere, but our town seems to really embrace them.
Yes.
And stuff like this just shows how much support there is for the arts.
Oh, it is. It's true. I mean, it was then, and it has continued to be through the years, the support that we've had. It's just amazing. Yes.
So we opened the doors in 1981.
That's actually pretty incredible. You purchased the building in 1980 and you did all the work.
Yes.
And got it open in 1981.
Yeah. Yes.
An awful lot of it was volunteer labor.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hand in it, a small hand in it. But I stand in the building sometimes and look around and try and remember what it was like before we started. And it's very difficult. We took down an entire wall, a concrete block wall, internal wall, and replaced it with a steel beam that's supported by the two outside walls and pillars, and that's just in front of the stage. It's just to me amazing. And as much as we wish we had a little bigger building and a little more storage space and so on, we're one of the very few clubs that are lucky enough to have our own venue. And that's worth an awful lot.
Definitely.
Yes, many amateur theater groups in our province and probably beyond have to rent space,
mm-hmm.
both for rehearsals and building sets and performing. And we have our own building. We don't have to do that. So
We build our sets on the stage usually because we'd have no other place to do it. But it also means the actors get used to the actual sets,
mm-hmm.
you know, well before opening, whereas in most places, you've got like maybe a couple of days, maybe 3 days to load your stuff in, set it all up, and practice with the, and it's always different, you know, when you get on the stage. So we're very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened after you opened the doors?
People came.
Well, for the most part, we've had three what we call main stage performances every year, fall, winter, and spring. But some years we've done Christmas shows, often a pantomime, second stage performances, which are usually play readings.
Occasionally there's been like a little one-act play that somebody puts mm-hmm. on or something.
Yes.
Or a musical review or something like that.
But right now, for the last, is it 3 years or 4 years that we've had the summer, the youth
this
summer?
This is the fourth year.
This is the fourth year we've had the youth summer theater. So we work with, they call themselves...
Moving Theater Performing Arts.
Moving Theater.
Which is a little collective of directors and choreographers and musicians who sponsor this program and run the program for 3 weeks every July. We start off with about 20 kids, and now I think this year there's 32, which is a lot, actually. And in 3 weeks, like, it's amazing. It's just amazing what they create in 3 weeks. And the kids are so interested, they're so committed, and even the ones that are sort of, you know, don't really know what it's about, you know, the little ones, they get on board and they work hard, but they have a lot of fun. And I'm just amazed at the quality of what they do in 3 weeks.
And then that culminates in four performances. And so this year, this July, they're doing a Peter Pan. It's always a junior production, so it's like a one act, 1 hour long. But the children learn the songs, they learn how to act, they learn about costumes and sets. And so the whole gamut of theater, it's just so wonderful. And it's very popular. It fills up within hours of registration opening. So if we could have more of those, it would be great.
Yeah, we could fill two of those, I think.
Yes.
A summer or a year, or be good, great to have something during the winter as well, you know, spread out.
Unfortunately, when we fit in rehearsals and then the run of a show, there's very little space in the calendar to add other things. If we had a separate rehearsal space, it would make a big difference, but we don't.
Maybe someday.
Someday.
Something for the future.
Yes.
We're always dreaming.
Yeah. We also have an improv group, and they meet twice a month through the main part of the year, not the summer. And then usually they do maybe two.
Lately they've been doing a performance at Theatre on the Edge, our little summer festival, which we haven't talked about yet. But they also do one or two during the year. And they're quite good, and the audiences have been growing.
Well, and the thing about improv, too, is that it pulls in a different audience than the audiences we get for our regular shows.
A younger demographic.
Yeah, we often get people coming to an improv show who've never been in our building before, which is wonderful.
And I think there's some spin-off, and they are more likely to come back and see one of our regular shows, and people discover theater that way.
Yes.
I know you've had some pretty elaborate plays as well. I went to see Mary Poppins, and that was, I have to say, that was mind-blowing.
That was, I directed that, and it was mind-blowing for me as well. I've never done anything so difficult in my life, and so complicated. But I had wonderful choreographer, wonderful music director, and in many ways as a director I just put it all together and then worked on the acting. And that's what I find so often in musicals, even professional musicals, it's all about the songs, and the acting that goes in between the songs is just sort of everybody stands in the theater and declaims their lines outward. And I watch those and I think, oh my God, this could be so much better. So I was determined that we were going to do that well, and I think we did.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, by the time, the first dress rehearsal, I guess, with an audience, I just sat there. I couldn't believe it.
But we had wonderful technicians, wonderful actors and singers, and amazing stage managers, because when you put a show like that on, the stage managers are in charge of everything, all the sets getting moved, the actors getting on, being where they should be, every prop being where it needs to be. It's huge. And so we were so lucky to
fantastic
have
lighting designer too.
Yes.
Well, as an audience member and a huge fan of the movie, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I was so happy that I was able to attend. And I really found it mind-blowing, because I know how much work went into it. Yeah. And yeah, you pulled it off. You really did. It was amazing.
And trying to do that on a stage where there is no wings, and all these different set pieces that had, you know, fireplaces and beds and all this stuff that had to constantly move in and out of the acting space. And it was like a Tetris puzzle on the sides of the stage, fitting all of these pieces. And it was just amazing. Well, engineering feat, you know.
And to add to that, who was going to move each of those pieces between scenes?
All choreographed. Sometimes we moved some set pieces actually outside into the alley, which was only a problem if it was snowing or raining, but
well, the kitchen set was only used in one scene, and so after that scene, it was moved out into the alley. And I don't know how many audience members knew that.
Well, I didn't.
You know, sometimes we look at shows that we'd like to do, and we think, oh, well, how would we ever do that on our little stage? And then I think of Mary Poppins, and not that, just that, but all, you know, Grease years ago, we've done all kinds of amazing shows that you think, how could we possibly do that on our stage?
Except I remember afterwards one of the stage managers saying, that almost killed me, and I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
And it's a credit not just to you for directing it and producing it, but, you know, to everybody who worked together to make it such a wonderful show.
That's one of the things that I wonder about. I look at especially some of the big shows where, like with Mary Poppins, there would have been probably at least 80 volunteers working on that show.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Quite possibly more. And I think, what motivates people to put in all these hours and hours and creativity and thought for something that's here and it's gone?
Yep.
Yes.
You know, but there's something. There's something magic about that, and there's something real about live actors kind of risking. There's an intimacy in live theater that you don't get with film. So I don't really understand all the magic myself, but I know it's there.
Did either of you start in acting itself, or because I know you're You're the president of
No, not me. I've been on stage very reluctantly and two or three small parts over the years. But no, I, from a very early age, I attended plays, mainly pantomimes, and when I was growing up in Scotland. And then wherever I've lived, I've always gone to theatres, both small and large, and love live theatre, but never desired to be on stage. No.
But I did. I love to perform. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I blew into town just a year after it started, like in 1978 in the fall, to take a job with the United Church here in this same building where we're having this conversation. And I showed up to audition for the first play, which was a Neil Simon comedy, Come Blow Your Horn. And I had had a very little bit of experience back when I was in St. Albert before teaching school. Enjoyed it. So I thought, oh, I'll do this some more of this. So I was amazed that when I got a leading role in the play. And that's where I met Susan. She was the producer of that show. So it's a little theater romance. Mm-hmm. And those things have happened from time to time. but yeah, all kinds of things started there. And when that was over, it was like, oh my God, I had no idea I could have this much fun and create something that people enjoyed. So yeah, I'm pumped. Once I got into directing, I found that I liked that at least as much as acting. You're still creating magic on stage and you're helping to draw out of actors what's in them. You know, what's already, you have to find the character in yourself. You can't just pretend or else that's just mechanical acting. It doesn't really work. So you're always trying to tease out of human beings what's in them to create the characters that you're, to tell the story that you want to tell. So both of those I enjoy very much. But
do you still act?
You've also done sound.
Yep, I act too. Yeah, I've done sound and kind of had some hand in getting some of the sound equipment and software that we have now. When I directed my first play, and the sound was okay, but I thought we could do better. So researched it, downloaded some software, which we're still using, and we just improve over time. And that's part of our philosophy, is constant improvement, mm-hmm. constant pursuit of excellence. We try not to rest on our laurels and just, coast.
So how do you choose the plays that you decide to produce?
Well, we have an artistic committee, which does the job of an artistic director in a kind of a traditional theater company. So I'm on that committee this year, and there are three of us. So we look at, we try to get a balance in the season. Often we like to find one that kind of draws a lot of people in the fall to get people back in the doors. And sometimes it might be a musical or a play with the people will recognize. Like this fall, we're doing The Mousetrap, Agatha Christie, which is, again, it's a name that will resonate with people. And so we sort of a bigger attracting play of some sort of in the fall. In the wintertime, people want to laugh. They want a little lightness from the long, the short days and the cold weather. So we usually try to find a comedy, something light in the wintertime. And then in the spring, we various ones of us like to also do some theater that's a little edgier, mm-hmm. That's a little more experimental, a little out of the run of the mill. And so we'll often choose those in the springtime because that's the production that goes to the Ozone Festival, which is... It happens every year. So we perform it there in front of a bunch of theater aficionados, so we know that they appreciate those kind of dramas and so on.
And it's also adjudicated
mm-hmm.
by
that's
a
right.
professional director.
So that's kind of the rough shape, but yeah. It varies quite a bit from season to season.
Yeah.
And
we also have to think about plays that have a cast that we will have. So in other words, we get more women auditioning usually mm-hmm. than men. So to pick a play that has 10 men in it probably wouldn't work for us. So that has to be taken into consideration. Ages sometimes is a consideration. So there's actually lots of things that the artistic committee have to think about mm-hmm. when they're picking plays.
Do you find there's kind of like a circle where you get more women here more youth here over the years?
I'm not sure about a circle, but there is sort of, you know, it goes up and down. Sometimes mm-hmm. we have a fair number of young people.
Yeah, the last 2 or 3 years, we've had a bit of an influx of people who have moved into the community, many of whom have some real experience.
And often you never know until auditions mm-hmm. who's going to show up. For example, the play we just did outside Mullingar, all 4 of those actors were brand new to our theatre. So it's not usually like that, but it happens sometimes. The summer program, the children's program, has brought in a number of youth. And so if we have a play that has some younger people in the cast, often they will feel very comfortable coming to auditions because they know the theatre and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a real plus for us to kind of getting new talent initiated.
Yeah.
It's tough with youth because they leave.
Yes, yes. But we should mention Theater on the Edge. You did mention it already, but for the last 10 years, we've had this summer festival, 3-day festival, and we call it Theater on the Edge, shortened to TOTE, T-O-T-E. And it's basically performances that are... It's often a little bit edgy, Theater on the Edge.
Which comes from the word fringe. I mean, envisioned it as a mini fringe festival, but we're not part of the fringe network, so we can't use that name. So we called it Theater on the Edge, like the fringe is on the edge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
They're kind of fringe-type performances for the most part.
We get some local people performing. But I think for the most part, it's people from other parts of the province.
And some of them are people who are on the fringe club circuits.
Yes.
And they love coming here. The artists absolutely love our little theater, and they love the audiences that they get here, and they love the way they're treated.
Yes.
They love the sense of hospitality that they get.
Well, it's quite different from the fringe festivals that are so huge.
And you're on your own there. I mean...
Yes. So... It's been very successful. This year they tried something a little different, and it was a partnership with...
The Arts Council.
The Arts Council. And some of the performances were quite different, too. One of them was actually held in...
The Jackson Field.
Jackson Playing Field. So...
Yeah, very unique experience, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of in flux right now, in a sense. They're experimenting with different formats to find something that works. But I think the partnership with the Arts Council is a really good thing. Christy, whose last name is escaping me at the moment, is their new, I'm not sure, executive director, or I'm not sure what his title is even, but he's got lots of experience with theater and very keen to get more stuff going and to have the Arts Council involved in more than the visual arts, which they've focused on the most. So there's some kind of new energy coming from there and some new resources. He's great at getting grants.
Finances are always a challenge for arts groups and others too, I suppose. And the pandemic really underlined that, with very little income during that time, but still having to pay bills.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been very lucky over the years. I mean, starting from the time we took over that building and renovated it, we've had such amazing support from local businesses and other organizations. And now the foundation that we have is wonderful. We also have sponsors for each of our shows. And we have an amazing person, a member who is in charge of the grant writing and the sponsorships, Howard DeLong. And he's just been absolutely amazing. And if it wasn't for the grant money especially, it would be very difficult for us to continue, because the income we get from productions, it covers the cost of that production and a bit more, but it does not cover the cost of maintaining the building, upgrading equipment, replacing equipment. And we rely on grants, especially for equipment. And Howard has just been absolutely amazing finding organizations that he can apply to get grants.
It's always wonderful when you have someone who can do stuff like that, whose specialty is reaching out.
Invaluable.
Invaluable, for sure.
And we like to keep our prices low as we can for our productions. And we are lower than most other theater clubs.
We are.
At least in the neighborhood and or a little bit below.
Yeah. But it's a fine balance.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially since the pandemic, the prices have, well, as you know, have
gone
skyrocketed. And things like materials for building sets, it's just the difference between before the pandemic and now is just huge. The
cost of a 2x4 is ridiculous.
Another problem for us, another challenge, is lack of storage space. So like materials, for example, we use in building a set, sometimes we can't keep them because there's no place to put them. We do have a big steel box, which is parked in the Salmore parking lot beside the Legion, which is great. We can certainly keep some building materials there, but not as much as we would like to be able to.
Mm-hmm.
And so makes it really hard because every time we've got to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, if there's anybody out there who's got a nice, you know, space somewhere,
a shed.
Would need to be probably heated minimally. But, yeah, that you'd like to donate or offer to us cheap, we could really use some storage space somewhere in town.
Yes, we could. And not just storage of building materials. Props, for example. We've got a very small props room. We've got a very small costume room. We get offers of donations of costumes from people constantly, and so often we have to say, I'm sorry, we just don't have space for them. And so it would be wonderful to have more space for props and costumes and set decor pieces, but the building's very small.
So thinking of the pandemic, that had to have caused some major, major problems because a theater is a place where people gather.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you can't.
Exactly.
So how did that go and what did you guys do?
Well, it was interesting how that came about. A lot of community theater groups just folded until they just closed down operations until the thing was over. We had some visionary people who said, no, that's not going to happen. We are going to provide a theater, a season of theater. It won't look like it normally looks, but we're gonna keep doing stuff through this time. I have to name Julia Boddy as one of the leading lights in that. She just wasn't willing to lay down and play dead. So and she got the whole board and the, you know, the company
artistic
behind
committee.
Her. And so it was like, okay, well, what can we do? If we can't do normal productions, what can we do? So the first thing we did was something we called Walkabout Theater. I think it was in late August, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was.
And it was basically, we had 10 little stages with little, you know, little tent roofs on them. I'm waving my arms as if people on the radio can see me.
I think it was 6, actually. Don't think we had 10, but
okay,
anyway.
Maybe it was 6.
Yeah.
It was 6. And we had 6 different plays, like little 10-minute performances, right? And they were going on the same stage 10 times or however many times.
Anyway.
So people bought tickets. It wasn't very expensive, but people bought tickets. And then they were assigned one stage to start at, so there was no more than 10 people at a stage,
socially,
so that they could be distance.
Socially distanced.
And we had ushers with rods showing what the 2 meters was that, you know, people needed to be separated. And people brought their own chairs if they wanted to, or they were short enough that, you know, you could stand. And so basically you saw 6 plays in rotation on these different stages. And people loved it. And it kept the energy going, it kept the interest going, it kept the life going, and it kept the creativity going.
We also, actually Kim directed a play reading of Outside Mullingar, the one that was just done on
that
stage.
We just finished.
And it was on our stage, 4 characters, physically distanced, and it was read, and it was videotaped, and then
3 cameras
shown on YouTube. And people bought tickets. I think we were able to have it on YouTube for 48 hours or something.
72 hours or something like that. people had to watch it within that window, and they just got the link to the play when they bought their ticket. And that went over, I mean, it wasn't a huge audience. We had a small audience. We could at that time just all spread out in the theater. So we did that. We did a film noir radio play evening.
Yes, well, that was when we were allowed 50%.
That's right.
Capacity. And so the radio plays meant that the actors could be spread out on the stage.
Mm-hmm. With the live folio, you know, providing all the sound effects that you could, the audience could see them making the sound effects as they were doing that.
And that was also videotaped. So people who didn't feel comfortable coming to the theater were able to watch it. We also did some trivia evenings on Zoom.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Just invited people to sign up and put them in little teams and did trivia games with some theater questions, you know.
And on Facebook, I basically did a history of Shuswap Theater. I did posts starting from the beginning, showing pictures of the old building, what it used to look like, and the renovation, and then of different productions. And people loved that. Probably got more comments on those posts than we've had on just about anything mm-hmm. else. So it kept a bit of life in theater.
And if any of your listeners have been here a while and seen a bunch of our productions, on our website you can watch a little video. It's a slideshow, a video of a slideshow of productions throughout the ages sort of thing that we've done since our beginning.
And I think we put that together for, was it the 40th or the 45th? 40th, I believe, anniversary of Shuswap Theatre starting.
Yeah, it was updated at some point, though.
Yes.
But anyway, it's there on shuswaptheatre.com is the website.
Yes. We belong to, the umbrella group is called Theatre BC, and it's the umbrella of all of amateur theatre groups in British Columbia. And the whole province is divided into zones. So I believe there are 10 zones. We're in the Okanagan zone. So
called Ozone.
Ozone, yes. And so every year, for us it's in May, our zone has a zone festival. And different theatre groups perform, usually their most recent play. And as I mentioned, it's adjudicated. And then it's kind of like an Oscar-style awards, where there's best actor, best actress, best set design, etc. And then best production moves on to the provincial festival, which is called Main Stage. And of course, during the pandemic, that couldn't happen. But one of the years of the pandemic, I'm not sure if it was 2021, Theatre BC basically asked theatre groups to submit something to show how they managed during the pandemic. And so one of our members made a video to show all the things that Kim has just said, all the things that were done.
Actually, that would be me.
Was it you? Okay. Didn't know if it was you. And submitted it. And we won. Well, we won an award for the video. And we won, what were they called? The Pivot Award,
yeah,
I think?
Something like that.
For how we managed to continue during the pandemic. So we were recognized provincially.
That's really excellent. That really is. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a special little group here. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with any of these things that you did during the pandemic, have you considered maybe keeping some of the ideas?
We've talked about doing the Walkabout Theater again, because mm-hmm. It doesn't take a whole lot. You can experiment, you can do, you know, somebody wants, one of our younger members wrote a comic thing about pirates, you know, a little 10-minute thing that was quite hilarious. And so it's an opportunity to do something like that that's kind of low risk.
Mm-hmm.
And people wander around and they quite like it. In fact, we've been asked whether we'll do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we're actually considering doing that again.
One of the challenges is getting enough people mm-hmm. to organize all these things. Like many organizations, getting and keeping volunteers is always a challenge. I mean, there's sort of the core group that has been around forever, plus new people. But some of the roles in theater are pretty major roles, like huge time commitments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge getting enough people to do those things. So often our creativity is limited by the number of people that we can find.
We need the administrators as well as the creative people, right?
Yes.
And there's lots of creative people in the theater, and sometimes we're a little scattered, and we need people like Susan to pull it all together and get it organized and get the boundaries clear and make sure it makes money and all those kinds of things. So anybody out there who has those kind of administrative skills and enjoys using those, we have opportunities for you.
Yes.
At no pay.
You mentioned our website, shushwaptheatre.com, and if you go there, there is a link at the top that says Get Involved, and if you click on that link, it will show you all of the different jobs, opportunities within our theatre, and a little explanation about each of them and what to do if you might be interested in getting involved.
Mm-hmm. With regard to COVID, we didn't mention what was done with Theatre on the Edge that year. The Theatre on the Edge went ahead entirely on video. It was all online. And so instead of asking our performers to come and do a show, we asked them to send us a video of their show. And so it sparked some creativity on the part of theatre artists, independent artists too, thinking about how they could do that. And so there were some really interesting things submitted. And it was offered online absolutely free. So we had a little bit of, I think, grant funding to make that possible.
Yes.
But of course, our expenses were down because we didn't have any people there. But again, it wasn't, didn't have the same magic as the in-person shows. But it was there, you know.
Yes, well, and it also meant that some artists who lived far away and would not have been able to travel here were able to be part of it.
And there were artists who figured out how to use video.
Yes.
You know, to communicate their stories. I mean, that's the thing. During COVID, we learned all kinds of skills.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot about film editing. Because when we did Outside Mullingar as a reading, and we had three cameras all filming at the same time, I had to figure out how to do that. Incredibly time-consuming.
Yes.
But really satisfying. And it's amazing what you can do with free software. We were really lucky. Well, not just us, but the BC Arts Council was fantastic during the pandemic. In that, they've got funding to make art happen all over the province, and they fund a lot of good stuff. During the pandemic, there was so little going on, and they gave really quite large grants to various companies without a lot. You didn't have to prove a lot in order to get it,
to keep the
organization going, keeping the lights on and the building open. So that helped us a tremendous amount through the winter of of COVID income.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And since the pandemic, how have things been going?
Well, I think it took a little while to get audience numbers back up again. You know, people feeling comfortable coming into a space like that.
Yeah, the audiences were fairly small that first year after we opened.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But then the next year was pretty much back to normal. And certainly the audiences have been very good. This past season was really good. So the audiences are building from year to year. I think generally we're having more sellouts and near sellouts.
Although we still have people who come only to musicals.
Or comedies. Yeah. Some people come to theater because they want to feel good. Mm-hmm. So if it isn't a feel-good show, then they're not interested. And that's fair. Everybody's not the same.
Yeah. After a long week, sometimes you just want to be entertained.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, I could mention that we've actually been pretty successful in making upgrades to our building, for example, like the seen the new facade, which is still not 100% completed. But again, construction during COVID, it skyrocketed the price. But again, the community was very generous. the service clubs, the community foundation, people like Saskew, and like we got grant money from all kinds of places, as well as individuals, and raised about, well,
and
around $100,000.
Lots of local businesses too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, our hearts are continually warmed by the response and the support we get from the community. There is a love out there.
Mm-hmm. See, you mentioned your renovations. They're just about done?
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of details to be cleaned up. Yeah. If you go by the theater, it's far more noticeable. Now, we're amazed how many people who would go visit the Salmar Theater and would come out regularly and get in their cars, they would never notice that our theater was right across the street from them. Well, they notice us now.
So what exactly did you have done?
Well, we had to remove the whole front, which was 1980s cedar siding, and it was rotting away and deteriorating badly. So we needed to do something. So what we wanted to do something was a design that would say, this is live theater. So if you look at the red corrugated siding stuff, you know, metal siding. And so it's all in red and black. And so the red in places is wavy to make it look like curtains.
Oh.
And we couldn't do that for practical reasons all the way across. And so the idea is that the doorway, the main door, is the proscenium arch. That's our little stage, and the curtains are above it and either side of it. And so it's simple, but it's kind of striking. The color is striking. And so the doors need to be painted black, and some other things need to be tidied up or just finished off.
Mm-hmm.
But the main work is done, and the expensive work is done. So that's been a really big success, even though it, like I say, the cost spiraled out, and we've had to take some money out of our reserves to cover that.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, we get by, you know, and we're always making equipment improvements and updates and stuff.
As we get grants, we're able to do that.
We
always have a wish list.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, when we get a grant, number one happens, and we work our way down.
What's next? Where are we going from here?
Well, we hope there'll still be live theater in Salmon Arm for many, many years to come.
Yeah, and we hope to keep growing our company. And we've got lots of dreams, but not necessarily a clear path to make those happen. We'd like to have more programs for kids and teens. And maybe adults as well. We'd like more ways for people to get in. For example, when we audition for a play, it's always a difficult choice because the director wants the absolute best actors they can get for those roles. And so it's a little harder for somebody who's kind of thinking they'd like to take a hand at that, you know, sometimes to get in. And so we'd like to find ways to have more opportunities for people to get on stage for the first time or the second time and kind of learn the ropes.
And that actually happens when we have a large cast productions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, musicals.
Like last fall we did Treasure Island, and it was a cast of over 20.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some people who either had never been on stage before or had only been on stage once or twice. And so there are always parts for people like that when mm-hmm. you have a large production. So that's one way we get new people involved.
We want to enhance our ability to use projections, to use projectors for creating scenery and so on. It's kind of magic what you can do with that. It's challenging in our theater
mm-hmm.
because, again, the low ceiling. You need to be shooting from up higher so you're not casting shadows on the ceiling, right? And so there's ways to get around that, but we need some better equipment to make that happen.
Yeah, and we'd love to change our lights all to LEDs, which is something that needs to happen gradually. It's
very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive. Even to get started is very expensive, but it's something that I think is happening in most theater companies, and so it's on our wish list.
And although you have just renovated the front part of the building, maybe one day a new building that has more storage?
Yes.
At some point, we'll need a new building. The building is aging.
Mm-hmm.
The engineers tell us that it's actually stable. There are cracks in the walls, but they've been there a long time and they're not getting any bigger.
That's the important thing.
So the engineer says, yeah, it's okay. At some point, it will need to be replaced. Mm-hmm. It's a light industrial building made of cinder blocks. So we haven't figured out how we're going to do that yet, but something will happen.
Something always seems to crop up for you as you've gone along over these decades.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, some years ago, we were on the edge financially. We were always wondering whether we were going to break even on a given year. And so there was some pressure to do only shows that were really popular, when would, you know, bring in lots of people and everything. And we were careful. We had a poverty mentality. And somewhere in there were a few people, and I was one of them, urging this to more adopt a philosophy of abundance and say, let's figure out what we want to do and then figure out how we're going to do it. And let's, instead of what's good enough, what can we get along with, what would be the excellent choice here? And gradually there was a shift. This has been this way for some time now. But at that time, there was a shift. And it's like the money started to roll in. And it's hard to say exactly what caused the money to roll in. But I'm convinced that having an attitude of poverty brings about more poverty. And having an attitude of abundance brings abundance. And so our needs have always been met, you know, when it comes right down to it. So we will continue and we will get better and better.
Is there anything that you would like the people of Salmon Arm to know, or something you would like to impart to the people of our community?
Well, if you've never been to live theater, please come, because we're amazed by the number of people who have never seen a live performance. And I'm sure there are many in Salmon Arm. And if you would like to get involved, we would love to have you.
Mm-hmm. There's an actor that I've worked with a number of times who he was in Mary Poppins, for example, and he often will give a little speech to a cast at just a, you know, an opening night or the night before. And with Mary Poppins, he said, you know, this play is about men. This story is about men. You think it's about Mary Poppins, but it's really about the dad. It's about Mr. Banks and his conversion to be the dad that he wanted to be. And so this fellow said, there will be men in the audience. There will be young men. There will be all kinds of people in this audience who will relate to this story and will find hope in this story. Never think that what we do is just entertainment. It's important what we do. And that has really stuck with me over the years, and thinking, yeah, it's not just entertainment. The storytelling that we do is important. It enlarges lives. It allows people to enter into the lives of other people who are unlike them. And that builds a sense of compassion. That builds a sense of understanding, a sense of tolerance for those differences, or even valuing of those differences. So that's what drives me to be involved in theater, is the importance of storytelling to enlarge consciousness and allow people to live more fully and build communities. So that's my little sell job for why you should come to see that. See what we do at live theater, but other arts too. I mean, other arts do that as well.
Thank you very much to both of you for coming in and having a chat with us. That was fascinating.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, we're pleased to do it.
Anytime. Yes.